Bruchim Abayim B'Shem Hashem Berech Nuchem V'Yis Hashem. Welcome to our weekly Wednesday Shir, which is being recorded on Tuesday evening. Nishmas Ruzumbas, Rachachana and Ezra. This Shabbos, Shpashis Vayakhil, single, Vayakhil alone, without Pekudei. This Shabbos is also known as Pasha Shkolim. This Shabbos is also Shabbos Mvorchim Chodesh Adar Sheni. And if I can find another few things to enumerate, then maybe we could just use the whole hour describing what Shabbos is. Pash Vayakhil is the last, technically speaking, this Shabbos would be the last Shabbos of the year. Based on that Chodesh Nisan is Rosh Hashanah, the Ilanus. Rosh Hashanah, it's not. Rosh Hashanah, the Ilanus is in Tu B'Shvat. There's a machlekes if the world was created as Chodesh Nisan or Chodesh Tishrei. If Rosh Hashanah starts on Nisan or starts on Tishrei. The months are counted from Nisan. Nisan is the first month of the year. And therefore, when the Torah refers to Tishrei, it refers to the Chodesh Hashvi'i, the seventh month. So therefore, Chodesh Adar, the last Shabbos, Shabbos of Orchim, the last Shabbos of Adar, would be the last Shabbos of the year, technically, in that vein. It would not be according to the calendar year. We don't say Tavshin Pei Hei starts in Chodesh Nisan. Tavshin Pei Hei will only start in Chodesh Rosh Hashanah of Tishrei. However, Nisan is the beginning of the months. HaChodesh Zelachem Reish Chadashim. It refers to Chodesh Nisan. We also know Nisan Nigalu, V'Nisan Asidu Ligoyel. In Nisan we were redeemed, and in Nisan we will be redeemed in the future as well. Does that mean that we have to discard or think off or wipe off any possibility of being redeemed any other month and just say that's it, we can only wait for Chodesh Nisan, and after Chodesh Nisan we don't have anyone? No, we can't say that. But neither here nor there right now, actually, because although this Shabbos, Shabbos Mvorchim of the next month after Chodesh Adar, due to the lunar cycle, this Shabbos, Shabbos Mvorchim Adar Sheni, not Chodesh Nisan. And therefore this Shabbos would not be the last Shabbos of the year, but it would be Shabbos of the year. What does that mean? Nobody should ever know about it. If a person has a yahrzeit and a plain Chodesh Adar, then they keep the yahrzeit and Chodesh Adar Aleph. A birthday, people keep the other Sheni, but a yahrzeit will keep the other Rishon. Why? Because since the cycle of the year, the 12-month cycle of the year, starting from Chodesh Nisan, ends in Chodesh Adar, if you would keep the yahrzeit in the second Adar, whereas the yahrzeit would not necessarily be the second Adar, it would be in other, a plain Adar, because that's when the person passed away, you would not be within the cycle of the year. Within the cycle of the 12-month cycle, you will not have kept the yahrzeit. So therefore, it is kept in Chodesh Adar Aleph. Mind you would ask, why, if we're talking about a Pasha, why would one prepare, or one bring this up, and truthfully, Rabbi, where are you getting this information from? Why are you discussing such random information? Well, obviously, we said it's not random, because we say that it's going to bring about the cycle of the year, and therefore this being the last of Chodesh Adar. However, I simply was confronted with the Shaila. The question is being asked on a constant basis. For those who had the first time that this came up in their cycle of the yard sites, whether they had a loved one pass away on regular Chedesh other, and now it's there's two others, they wanted to know which one to keep and why. So therefore, knowing the first one is common knowledge, basically, unfortunately, knowing why, I had to look up. I'm sure, I didn't invent the wheel, and I didn't have to look into Wikipedia, I didn't have to dig deep down to find it. It's obvious it's brought down many sfarim. But just the fact that I looked it up, so therefore it came up now to mind to mention. Pashva Yakhil and Shkolim will have a common denominator, obviously, which we'll soon discuss. Prior to that, looking into Chedesh, into Shabbos, into Pashva Yakhil as its own entity. Pashva Yakhil is a very, very powerful parsha. Although it is a repetition of what we already learned in Truma Tetzaveh, discussing the different vessels, etc., of the Mishkan, it's unique in a very strong lesson to Klal Yisrael. First of all, the concept of donating, of giving a donation. The mitzvah brought about, Moshe required, Moshe asked of each and every person to bring donations to Mishkan. Ultimately, Baruch Hashem, there was an overwhelming response, and Moshe had to say, stop. And today's chita says, stop, enough, Moshe Dayim. Questions fly up all over the place, of course. Why would he stop? Put it in a storage. Put it in a savings account. Put it. We find, interestingly, the most prominent donors were the women. Women sought to donate far beyond their capacity, far beyond their capabilities, but with a full heart and soul. When the yiras needed to be sewn, the curtains needed to be sewn, they were sewn from the wool of a sheep. The normal way would, of course, shear the sheep, is what we do today. They shear the sheep. And then you comb out, and you make it fine, and you sew it, whatever you do. I didn't take up this in high school, or college for that matter. So I can't tell you exactly how it's processed, and etc. And I'm not asking anyone to send me any information on it, or any kind of links to how to find, how to do the wool from the sheep to how to turn it into whatever you need to make from it. A sweater. The women, in turn, understood several things. Firstly, when you shear the wool, it's now severed from its source, and therefore it's not receiving nutrients or whatever it needs to grow it to remain full. And immediately after shearing it, even if you took it immediately and started to process it, it's already not as the quality as it is when it's on the sheep. It's not the same. So what do the women do? They process the wool on the back of the sheep. On the back of the sheep, they processed the wool, and then they wove the wool on the back of the sheep, and they had the complete whatever they needed, then they sheared the sheep. Obviously, this required a tremendous amount of talent. This is not a simple task, not by a long shot. But yet, this is how they did it. We also see, when the women came to donate, they came with their husbands. Did they bring that much gold that they couldn't carry it themselves? They needed the husband to carry. Rather, this tells us the maila, the specialty of the woman. Of the woman of valor, the Akeres Habayis, the holy woman who runs a household and builds a household, who a household grows around her, thrives around her. It's she that educates the house, educates the children, and makes the house be what it has to be. So it's A, a praise to the woman, and B, a heads up to the woman. That's how they have to be. Firstly, the praise. The women came with their husbands because the women don't do what husbands do when it comes to giving tzedakah. They don't sit and calculate. They don't make a cheshbon. Unless they are the breadwinner, and then they have to account for every penny for themselves. So then they make their calculation, how much exactly they made, and how much exactly, excuse me, they have to give for Maisa, for tithing. And if their money that they're bringing in is supporting the family, then they obviously are not going to be looking to give a chaimish. A fifth. Tenth is enough. Whereas, if their husbands are the breadwinners, or if they earn extra side money, they reach down deep. They reach down deep and they give like a man is supposed to give. Give until it hurts. Obviously, you can't be frivolous with your money. You have to be seichel, and therefore told not to give more than a fifth, because that's really squandering money. But it's also how you give it. Some people give it and they say, okay, here, I'm going to give you a check. Can it wait till tomorrow to go in the bank? You have the money, but I don't want to part with it for another day. If you can wait another day, it would be great. And you have a cheshbon, exactly what you're earning, exactly what you have in the bank, exactly what you could donate, and what you could give and what you can't. The woman doesn't make that cheshbon. And therefore the woman wanted to give Mishkan for Hashem, for Hashem's house. Please take. Now, we were concerned. The people that are collecting the money were concerned that if a woman would come with such a tremendous donation, perhaps this would cause a problem, chas v'shalom, shalom bayis, in her peace at home. And the husband would be upset with her. Why are you giving away this money? Therefore, they sought to it to bring along the husband. And with the husband at their side, they gave the money. So there was no question. If the husband didn't want, he would have said no. He would have stopped. Since the husband was standing right there, and he agreed, obviously, to give the money, then there was no problem giving the money. So the woman knew, in order for her to be able to give the way she wants to give, in order for her donation to be accepted the way she wants it accepted, where the person understands that it's given full-heartedly from the family, or from her, from everything. She had her husband there to make sure that, back her up. The women that were weaving the wool had a talent. They had a talent. This is not every woman can do this. Not every woman can sew, not every woman can cook. And some people say that if Uma can clean. That's a shame. Therefore, the women, with their talent, they knew HaKadosh Baruch Hu bestowed this talent within them, and therefore they went and they gave their, they used their talent for Davar Shebikdusha. Obviously, you could probably sell this product that you did on the back of the sheep for a much higher price than selling in a store from the carpet that you wove. And therefore, this would obviously be a sales pitch for the item. Please come and buy our carpets. Our carpets are made directly on the back of the animal, and it doesn't hurt them a bit. There's no pain to the animal. And then we cut off the sheep, the wool, one full carpet, they don't feel a thing. I don't know, maybe when they shear the wool otherwise, maybe it hurts the animal because you're being careful, you want to take off every hair. I don't know. But this would be a very big come on item, a very big come on sale pitch. But they used this talent that Hashem bestowed within them for a davar shebikdusha, for a holy item, for the holiness of the holy temple, so that it be used for the name of God, for the home in which HaKadosh Baruch Hu said He wants to come and dwell, where the Almighty said He wants to come and live. V'shachanti b'seichem. So the women again are teaching us a very important, valuable lesson. We all have a certain talent. We all have a certain knowledge or strength that we could do better than anyone else. We need to apply that to a service of Hashem. If you have a talent, let's call it a talent. The person that has a beautiful voice, singing voice, the man obviously, should be the chazan in the shul. Should lead the davening in shul, and even if he doesn't, people around him by his place should have enough from the pleasure from hearing the way he davens. A person that has a beautiful handwriting should be writing Sifrei Torah and mezuzos, tefillin. Everything, any given talent that a person has, wants to see to it that they devote to the service of Hashem. This is how the women showed us and taught us this valuable lesson. That they had this talent and they sought to give it and to devote it totally to the service of Hashem. And so too, when we have anything, any kind of talent, different or extra, or one that can memorize, people that can memorize things, people that can draw, or it should all be done always for Kedushas Hashem, for sanctifying Hashem's name. For we are sent on this world for just that mission, to sanctify Hashem's name, and to do, make a dwelling place for HaKadosh Baruch Hu here in this world. Pash Vayakel and Shkolim. Not always they come together, but they oftentimes do. They both signify the unity of Klal Yisrael. Now, interestingly, Shkolem is read from the beginning of Kisiso, which we read last week. And we're going to read it again this week. But only for Maftir, only a part. It shows a tremendous unity between the Jews themselves and between the Jews and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Parsha Vayakel begins, as we said, that Moshe Rabbeinu gathers together all the Jews, the entire nation, and commands them, first and foremost, the commandment of Shabbos and the work of the Mishkan. And the reason that they are brought down simultaneously is to teach us that the 39 laws of what the prohibitions of Shabbos are taught from the work that's done in the Mishkan. In order for the Eibishter to rest amongst the Jews, he has to reach and achieve first to Achdus, to unity, to becoming a Kahal Echad, a community. As we see, Barchenu Avinu Kulanu Ke'echad, we ask the Almighty to bless us in Shemoneh Esrei, at the end of Shemoneh Esrei, in the Sim Shalom. Bless us, our Father, when? How? Kulanu Ke'echad, when we are all one. Shkolim, the same. Same concept is brought about, with an extra emphasis. There's a little bit of a bewilderment here in this parasha. It's known generalization. Every Dovah Shebikdusha needs to be a complete item. An esrig has to be a perfect esrig. It can't be missing a piece because it's not kosher. Tefillin cannot be missing a corner. All the corners have to be perfectly squared off and pointed, and if Chas Shalom they're rounded, it's not kosher. And the same is with your lulav, has to have all four minim. And many, many such mitzvahs that need to have a complete measurement. And here, when it comes to giving the truma, the donation for the sacrifices, the public sacrifices, HaKadosh Baruch Hu commands each Jew to give a half of a shekel. Not an entire one, not a whole one. And nobody, it didn't matter if you were wealthy, if you were poor. HaAshir lo yarbeh v'hadal lo yam'it. The rich man cannot give more and the poor man cannot give less. And that was the din. That's how it worked when it talked about the donations for the sacrifices of the public. The public sacrifices, which meant there were certain karbanis that had to be brought. A karban chatas is a personal one. A shlom was a personal. Ailu was personal. Mincha. But for the different minchas that had to be brought, was either a poor person brought a mincha, or there were minchas that were brought as a general. The klal from Klal Yisrael. So those that were brought from the public were bought with this money. That's how they were purchased. Another thing, the Teda itself shows us and tells us the shekel itself, its value is 20 gera, esrim gera. Half a shekel is 10. It's also a complete amount. So say that you should bring 10 gera. Why do you say machtzis hashekel, a half a shekel nafke, to tell us and to not hint, but to literally imply that it has to be only a half, not a whole? Well, you can say 10 gera. 10 gera. 10 gera translates to a half a shekel. But I don't ask you to translate. I don't ask you to go on Google and try to see the value of it. I'm telling you simply, Torah tells us that it's Esrim Gedel Shekel. But now, instead of saying give 10 Gedel, Torah says to give a half a shekel. This ultimately teaches us a very basic, fundamental foundation in the service to Hashem. A Jew needs to be constantly reminded that he himself is only a machtzis, he's only a half. What completes him? What makes him a davar shalom? A fellow Jew. In order to be in the situation of shekel hakodesh, he has an obligation to unite with a second, the fellow Jew. And not just unite, but in a way of v'ahavta l'reacha kamecha. And then when he's united, only then, when he's completely united with a friend, do we have a complete entity. I'm recording this year. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I actually thought you were asking if you make matzahs. Okay, anyway, I'm recording your share. Apologies. My son from New Zealand. When you live in New Zealand, no matter what you're doing, if the child calls, you answer the phone. We could have waited, but that's what it's all about. Sorry. So the person needs to be in a matzav of a shekel hakedish, the obligation to unite with a fellow Jew in a way of ahavta l'reacha kamecha. And that way is a complete unity with your friend, then we have a complete entity. Another lesson that we have in Machzis, it's the recognition that in order to be a Metzius Shlema, a complete entity, a person has to be united with God. The person, the Jew, needs to feel that his completion is only when he's attached to God. Only then is he a complete entity. As long as the person thinks that they're on their own, and that they're doing their own thing, and they're becoming their own thing, they are not a full entity. What makes them the full entity? Only uniting with God. God and with a fellow Jew. And this we see in the shekel. The shekel was 20 geta, as we said. And we know that the people, the world's existing and continues to exist from the 10 godly spheres. And in conjunction with them, we have 10 keiches in a person, and the 10 keiches of the nefesh of a person receive from the 10 spheres of godliness. As we know, there's chesed, there's gvura, tiferes, netzach, hey, yaseid, malchus. And it starts with chabad, chochma, bina, and das. And this is conjunction with the mind and the heart of the person, and the actions of a person, and the behavioral statuses of a person. So we find that the person, when he's himself, he's only machtzis shekel. Because the 10 with the metzias shlema of completion of 20 is when he can connect, unites with his keiches of a nefesh, with the spheres, of the godly spheres, which then make him sholem then turn it to 20, which would be the Esrim Gera. These two explanations of Maksa Shekel, in essence, are all one. Both one. And therefore, in order to say, as we said, to unite two Jews, to become one, a person has to be somewhat humbled before HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in order to unite with their Maker, with the HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the same with a friend. In order that unity, the HaKadosh Baruch Hu bishleim amitis, the person needs to be one with a fellow Jew and show that the fellow Jew is a part of himself. This unity requires preparation for the unity, the complete unity and the completion between the person and HaKadosh Baruch Hu and HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Am Yisrael, between each Jew and between themselves. And therefore, when we mekayim vayakil from the lashon of kol godol yeshuvu heino, that they all, the entire nation, will return to here, as the prophet Yirmiyah says, and it will be united, the kibbutz kol agolius, all the people from all the different parts of the exiles will be united once again through Mashiach Tzidkenu Tekef Umiyad Mamish Amin. And therefore, this is the message of both Vayakil and Shkolim. So it's not coincidentally that they're read together, but rather we see they're arm in arm. They unite the Jews and their fellow Jew, and the Jew and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu with the Jew. As we said before, when Moshe begins the command of Vayakel, he tells the Jews about keeping Shabbos. Keeping Shabbos and how to make the Mishkan. Rashi takes the words Vayakel Moshe and explains the next day after Yom Kippur, when he came down from the mountain. Which means to say, the gathering of Bnei Yisrael and the commandment of Shemitah Shabbos and Menachas HaMishkan was the day after Yom Kippur, when he came down from Har Sinai, and he brought with him the second Luchas. He went up after breaking the Luchas, the first Luchas, on Shavuos B'Tammuz. He spent 40 days through Rosh Chodesh El davening for Klal Yisrael. From Rosh Chodesh El, he went back to get the second set of luchas for a third time, 40 days and 40 nights, and therefore came back on Yom Kippur, and now gathered the Jews the next day, which is the day after Yom Kippur. This explanation of Rashi needs to be clarified. First of all, how does Rashi know that the Machras Yom Kippurim and not Yom Kippurim itself? How do we know it was the day after Yom Kippur, not Yom Kippur itself? Immediately when he came down from the mountain, he spoke. Why does it have to be the next day? Secondly, why did Moshe wait a full day to give over the commandment and didn't give it over immediately when he came down from the mountain? We know the Kalal, keep his score on Gemara Pesachim Dalet Amud Aleph, Zrizim Magdimin LeMitzvos. Zrizim, people that are quick, they are quick to do their mitzvahs. They do their mitzvahs as quickly as possible. In that case, why would he wait? Why would he tardy a whole day to tell these laws? Rashi comes to this conclusion that it was the next day after Yom Kippur, from the word Vayakhil. What does it mean? What is the actual translation of the word? Moshe Rabbeinu did something physical. Gathering the Jews. So therefore it must be that this didn't happen in Yom Kippur itself. Because we could also suppose that when Moshe came down from Har Sinai, the Jews came together. They came to greet him. Whereas the Pasha is telling us that Moshe gathered the people specially. He called them together for an assembly. So if he now called them for assembly and they now assembled the Jews only via Moshe's command, this wasn't the day of Yom Kippur when Moshe came down. Because when Moshe came down with the second Lucas, everybody came by themselves. So the Torah is teaching us here that when the Jews came together to accept the second Lucas from Moshe Rabbeinu, he didn't give over to them in that same situation the commandment of keeping Shabbos and doing Mishkan. He did this the next day when he gathered them on his own. Why? In order to give them a commandment of Hashem. But we still have a question. Why wait the next day? Why did he not give it over right away? And the answer is, when Moshe Rabbeinu came down from Har Sinai, and he brought with him the second Luchos, the Jews received a tremendous yearning. A yearning welled up within them to accept the Luchos. And the simcha, the joy of the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu forgave them on the sin of the golden calf. And therefore, on Yom Kippur itself, they were totally head and soul and body entrenched in this very emotion. In the forgiveness that God forgave them, the Torah that they were receiving, they were not ready to hear anything else. This was a tremendously high level they were at. So therefore, only the next day did Moshe gather the Jews. Once again, and gave them over these commandments. Gave over the commandments of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Which is the work that has to be done, repel. Keeping Shabbos, Melechus HaMishkan. Yom Kippur itself, Bnei Yisrael, were actually enveloped in the Torah itself. There was no time, no place for the commandments of teaching them what had to be done in the world itself. So we learn two things. Firstly, there's a special maila, a special extras, special, whatever you want to call it, a maila miyuchedes in the Yinov Torah, that a person attaches themselves to it till they don't have any place for anything else. Even in a higher calling, like doing the Mishkan, it's not, it don't fit the picture now. Right now, what fits the mold is the Torah. Secondly, as great as the Torah is, after achieving this tremendous connection with Torah, one needs to get out of the realm of the four cubits of Torah, of being surrounded so totally enveloped, in order to do the worldly yearnings of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. To make a Mishkan, Metzias Eilam, Shechina, to bring down the resting place for the Shechina, etc. So you therefore need to detach yourself from that holy, holy moment of Torah. So once a person sits and learns Torah and totally throws themselves into their Torah studies, a Jew then needs to go out and work on the world as well. Because anyone that says, Ein li ela Torah, the Gemara, if you keep his court home, Yevamos, Kuftesam, and Beis, it's also brought down in Pirkei Avos. Anyone who says, Ein li ela Torah, Afilu Torah Ein li. Anyone who says that I have nothing else but Torah, he doesn't have Torah either. Thank you very much. If Torah is Chayiv, with Torah is Chayiv also Gemilas Chasodim, doing favors for one another, and only then can we see to it that we cause the resting of the Shechina that brings together with it the Geul Amitis Vashlema. Ayidei Mashiach Tzidkenu Meirev Yemeinu Omein Selo. So let us talk about Shabbos. Moshe gathers, as we said, the Jews, the beginning of the parasha, and tells them about keeping Shabbos. Now, I don't know if you're aware of it, but it's highly unlikely that you didn't get it. There's a video of the owner of, who's now the owner of Tops Liquor, a very famous liquor store here in Brooklyn on Avenue U, who now became Hashem Shabbos. He became Hashem Shabbos. He closes the store now on Shabbos. He himself is keeping now Shabbos, him and his family. And he says the benefits for himself, for his family, are something that is indescribable. It's a 6-minute video. I'm not going to repeat everything he said. He says the reaction of the fellow Jews coming into the store. He says he now joined a football team of 2 million Jews. This is everybody with either giving him high fives, thumbs up, encouraging him, great job, fantastic what you're doing. It's amazing. Shmiras Shabbos. A fellow once came to his Rebbe. I read the story, it doesn't specify which Rebbe it was. So I have no idea which Rebbe we're talking about here. Phil came to his Rebbe, and he the Rebbe asked him, do you learn Torah? Do you have a kvius in Torah? Do you have a set time that you study Torah? He says, please, I have to work. These are things for the angels. All these big spiritual things for Malachim, for Big Tzadikim. They don't need my Torah. I have better things. And your mitzvahs? I do what I can when I can do it. Also, Kadosh Baruch Hu needs my mitzvahs. So the Rebbe asked him, Zagmir, what do you do for a living? He says, I'm an artist. You're an artist. I say it's an artist. You mean what's an artist? I draw pictures. I draw paintings. Make a living from that. Says a good artist makes livings. Sure. Make a very good living. He says, what's all the good living? So he says, I had a guy who sold a painting. Sold a painting. What kind of painting? It was a landscape painting. A landscape painting. Mountains. Yeah? Sunset. Yeah? Trees. Yeah? Water. Yeah? Impressive. Was it nice? It's beautiful. It's amazing. Magnificent. Says, tell me, how much you sell it for? He sold it for $5 million. He sold it for $5 million. Says, yeah. He sold it for $5 million, a painting. He says, yeah. He says, how? What do you mean? It was beautiful. It was gorgeous. People were going crazy over it. $5 million? Tell me you sold a painting for $10,000. I'm impressed. $20,000. I'm impressed. $50,000. I'm still blown out of the water. $5 million? Is that exaggerated? You have to understand. You have to understand. So what am I understanding? I have to know something else. If I took a picture, and it was a beautiful picture of the same landscape. I will capture the water flowing, and I will capture every leaf of a tree, and I will capture every bird that's flying through. I will capture every nuance that there is in this picture. I can sell it for $5 million. Better yet, will it not be as nice as the painting? I have a nice camera, a good expensive camera. I'll take this picture, I'll put it on a lens, in a frame, in a laminate, or whatever I have to put it on. It'll be the same, even better than the painting. Can't sell it for $5 million. You have to understand. When you take a picture with your camera, you open your camera, and you turn it on, and you focus it. There are cameras that have this thing that you turn in the front, the lens, and you focus it. Today they take the phone and you push your buttons and focus. Garnished. You focus it. And you zoom in or you zoom out, and you get it. When you snap that picture, providing your hands don't shake like a leaf, you snap that picture, you know exactly what that picture is going to be. Yeah. You print it on a canvas with the highest quality printing from the highest quality of a picture. You know exactly what you're going to get. Yeah. The artist is very, very verkocht. Enthusiastic, because he's discussing and he's teaching about it. His facht, his talent, his art. So an artist takes a canvas, a blank canvas, and he puts it on the, what's it called, easel, whatever you call it, easel. Puts it on his easel. The easel, an easel is a donkey. Whatever. It's on the easel. And he takes the brush. And he puts the brush into the paint. That first stroke represents trepidation, represents anticipation, represents a zillion different emotions, because he doesn't know exactly how that stroke is going to fit and how exactly it's going to mold into the picture which he's trying to depict. And thereby each time he takes the dip and dips that brush into a different color paint to paint another part of his painting, he is still with that same fervor, he's still with that same fear of what am I actually coming up with? What am I actually going to come out? How will my results be? And I don't know. I don't know, says the artist, what my result will be. I could come up with that $5 million painting, and my painting could be only worth $5. It could go either way. Today's day and age, obviously, we all know, they take a paintbrush and they spritz it like the Kohen used to spritz the blood on the Mizbeach, and they say, ooh, $5 million, this is a piece of work, piece of art, this is classic, this is it. Chmana Litzlan. It's because Eilim Gailim. And you also go, when you go for therapy, they put a little dot on a paper and say, what do you see? I see a black dot on a piece of white paper. What do you really see? What's really in there? What's really in this art? But when the moron goes and takes a banana and tapes it to a painting and says, oh, this is a piece of art. And it sells for heck knows what. But that's not the point. The point is, the artist is trying to explain how every stroke that's going to take place while making this painting is turning worlds. Ken Velton. The photographer has got a talent. I won't take it away from him. He's coming up with a beautiful picture. But in the Shire, doesn't compare what the artist put into this and what made this particular piece of art. Tells him the Rebbe, my dear Yid, you're an Ish Poshut, a simple person. You have to go through tremendous sacrifice when you sit down to study a piece of Gemara, study a Maimon Chassidus, to read a Pasuk in Chumash and Tehillim. And when you open your book to begin with, you don't know what's going to come out of your mouth. You don't know if you pronounce the words properly. You don't know if you're going to say them correctly. And then, Baruch Hashem, you have the Yetzer Hara that comes behind you and whispers some Machshav Zoris into your mind. Some mundane thoughts. A Malach hasn't had none of these problems. The Malach gets up and sings Kodesh, 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 Hashem Tzavokes. In a proud way, in a proud fashion. With no fears, no worries, what's going to be saying, what David is going to say about it. You are that artist. When you daven, when you learn, you are the artist. You are the one that's putting together this painting without knowing how it's going to come out. The Malach is a photographer. So yeah, he has the Malachim as photographers. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants you as the artist. Wants you to come out with this magnificent masterpiece that sells for $5 million. Therefore, he commands them now, at the beginning of the parasha, the pasuk sheishesom te'osem alocha, v'yemashviyi lachem kedesh Shabbos Shabbosim legemen. 6 days a week work should be done. The seventh day should be holy for you, and it should be the day of rest. Our sages learn from this pasuk Shmiras Shabbos is a mitzvah. Heating Shabbos, keeping Shabbos is a mitzvah. It's not only a mitzvah, but it's a service, a way of doing, a way of working for Hashem. By the 6 days of working, just like we're commanded on the seventh day to rest, we're commanded as well to do the 6 days a week work. To work and serve Hashem. This pasuk, though, hints how a person needs to devote and dedicate his service to the 6 days of creation. Moshe Rabbeinu spoke directly to the Jews. What was more natural to say 6 days? Ta'asu, malacha, you should work. Ta'aseh. But he says te'aseh, it should be done. When you tell a person ta'aseh, do something, he has to put himself into it. He has to devote himself head and shoulders. When you say it should be done, it means to say the job has to get done. Whatever you put into it, but the job has to get done. That's all I care. I don't care if you don't put much into it. And this is in essence what the Torah asks of us, requires of us, correctly. We have to serve on the 6 days a week. And this is even the mitzvah to involve ourselves in work, but not to throw ourselves head and shoulders. Not our head should be in our boots that we sell. A Jew needs to constantly remember, this is not the reason for living. The reason for living is for HaKadosh Baruch Hu put us onto this world. What you do with your hands, yes, it's a beautiful thing, it's fantastic. That Yigiyah Kapecha only with your hands, but not with the rest of your keichas, not with your head and your heart and your soul. But a job has to be done the way it has to be done, and this way it will become Ashrecha V'Tevlach. Someone will come and ask, if I don't put myself totally into my job, my whole heart and soul, how do I know it's going to be successful? We have to know that we have to have M'tochen and Amun and HaKadosh Baruch Hu and believe HaKadosh Baruch Hu will see to it. He bestows blessings on everything that we do. We put our hands to it just to show that this is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants of us, and thereby HaKadosh Baruch Hu will see to it that it comes out the way it should. If that's the case, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu says that a Jew should not throw himself into his 6 days of work with his whole life and soul and heart and soul, but rather just to involve his whatever he can on the minimal and leave the soul for all the Torah and mitzvahs, this is when HaKadosh Baruch Hu will give his blessing. A Jew works for 6 days and 6 days of week, work week according to the directive of Torah. Then his Shabbos is also different. He doesn't have the problem of just having to sit and sleep on Shabbos. He thinks and he involves himself. He doesn't think about all the mundane things on Shabbos, but rather he lives a life of a Jewish life, of a devoted, dedicated Jew to the HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And his Jewish lifestyle even comes about in the weekdays, and so much more so on Shabbos. And may we take a merit this Shabbos, as Shkolim is read, and as we read Vayakel, we gather together, and we be, as we said before, all of us come together once again in Yerushalayim, in HaKadosh, this Shabbos with Mashiach Tzidkenu, Shabbat Shalom to all.